right, let's start our show. We are having a lot of fun. Oh gosh, I just broke the Alicia, I just broke the soundboard again. Good thing we're moving to another studio at some point. Okay, friends, it is time to start the Aging Well Together show. Oh my goodness, we have so much to talk about today. I have my longtime good friend and colleague and mentor, Pat Sprigg, is joining us, who is a longtime advocate and provider in the aging and long-term care space. So we have a lot of catching up to do, though we hang out all the time, but we're going to ask her all kinds of fun aging-related questions. I am so excited for all we are going to learn together today and discuss, especially how the field has changed over the years. But before we dive into our show, as always, we want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro on 103.5 FM for hosting our weekly Aging Well Together show. And as I love to say, the Aging Well Together show is brought to you by the tremendously helpful team at the Orange County Department on Aging. They really are great. Yesterday, Alicia and I spent all morning at the Passmore Center in Hillsborough. They had a wonderful health and wellness fair. I'm looking at our fan. It is hot in here, folks. They had a wonderful fair, and it was great. We had a great time. As a reminder, please join us each week as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for aging well together. You can catch us live every Thursday from 2 to 3, or you can stream us live through WCOMFM.org. And thank you for those of you who are streaming us now and listening to us. You also can listen to any of our previous shows, aka our podcasts, which have become quite I'm not going to say famous, but they've become popular as I hear. Those are available through the Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is, this is where I pause so people can get a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen. You can find our website, www.orangecountync.gov/aging. On the website, you can find links to our Aging Well Together radio show, as well as a host of helpful other resources about services in Orange County, North Carolina, I always like to say, since we're getting a larger listenership. And there's a lot of Orange Counties around the country, but this is for Orange County, North Carolina. If you have questions about any of the resources that we discuss on the shows, or if you want to suggest a topic for an upcoming show, and Alicia, I booked 8 shows yesterday, just walking around the health and wellness fair and seeing other vendors. It was crazy. So we have shows coming up, but you can always reach out to us with suggestions. You can either call the Orange County Department on Aging, get your pencils up at 919-968-2070, or feel free to email me at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. That's agingwelltogethershow, all one word, at gmail.com. Okay, as always, a shout out to the wonderful Carrboro bass band, the Robert Bradford Quartet, for allowing us to use their great music for our opening, and you'll hear more at the close of our show. And now, our fabulous co-host who left us, abandoned us for weeks, Alicia Reed, one of the incomparable wellness instructors with the Orange County Department on Aging, is finally back in the studio with us. We missed you, Alicia.
I miss being gone. I feel like I've been gone forever, and it wasn't even like vacation. It was a trip.
I don't want to ask. We'll talk offline. Yeah. I don't know where you were, missed you.
And I'm glad to be back.
Okay. And as we always do, Alicia, you're back. Put the microphone close to you so everyone can hear.
I thought I was pretty close. I can hear me. Can you?
You can get up a little bit. Okay, there we go.
Lean into it. I'll lean into it.
All right. So now for me, and then we're going to get into our little fun special for a few minutes. I am Heather Altman. I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community. I'm a caregiver for older family members. And at 53, I am focusing on my own changing needs, especially how hot it is in the studio. So I'm super invested in how we are all aging well together. Okay, this is the part of the show where I generally turn it over to to our guests, but I'm not going to do that yet. We're going to take a 2-minute.
Uh-oh.
I know, Pat. Pat is used to my weirdness. And Alicia, you have no idea what's about to happen, but I'm going to tell you.
And Pat does?
No, she doesn't either. This is a surprise for both of you. And it was a really big surprise for me. And let's see if I can do the technology.
Okay.
About a month ago, April 8th, I got an email from Ivor Game, a singer-songwriter from Middlesex, just west of London in England.
Hmm.
So I don't know how far the reach of our streaming is
London.
Or our podcast. Yeah. But, and this is, we've gotten a few listeners from around the country. This is our first time international connections.
I like it.
Anyway, tomorrow, so Ivor is a singer-songwriter. Tomorrow he is releasing a new single called We're Getting Older.
Oh, wow.
And it's all about, it's a gentle song, and I've listened to it so many times. I so love it.
And
Ivor,
like it.
If you're listening, A, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, and B, I love your music. It is a gentle song about aging, memory, and a love song, too.
Wow.
So he asked if we might consider playing it, because the song's getting released tomorrow. And so he sent it to me, so I pulled it up on YouTube. So if I can do this right, I really hope I'm doing this. Let's see if we can play it, and it's just shy of 2 minutes.
Sometimes I lose my memory. I'm getting older, and with it comes my energy. Where on earth did I put yesterday? I'm getting regrets, they never dare to stay. But as I told you, I can't recall them anyway.
It's diverse. It goes in every.
I loved that.
I like it. I like it.
My sound and my headphones isn't loud enough, but so I hope our and but then I look on the recording and it was super loud there. So I don't know how loud it was for our listeners, but for us we had to put it really loud. But I just thought, oh my gosh,
nice,
and it was so sweet, and I love the like love song. Okay, all right. Now that we had a really fun little...
That was nice.
A little now musical
laid
interlude.
Me back. I'm all laid back. And
I know. And now we're not getting laid back. Now... Oh, wait. Let me...
That was nice, Heather.
Thank you. There we go. And I didn't think Pat would mind. All right. Now we're going to dive all into Pat. We have such a great guest this week. I'm looking at her. We have the truly amazing Pat Sprigg, my mentor for more than 25 years. Mm-hmm. Pat Sprigg was the president and CEO of our local Carol Woods retirement community for almost 30 years. She is a national leader in the aging and long-term care space and is well known for her work supporting the rights and inclusion of older adults, especially those with dementia. So it's fitting to come right after our last two shows, mm-hmm. which were all about local resources and research around brain change. Mm-hmm. And before I turn it over to Pat, let's give her a little bit of praise and make her uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Right as Pat was transitioning, as stepping down from her role, our Governor Cooper gave Pat the highest honor a North Carolina citizen can have for exemplary service and contribution to North Carolina. She is a member of a very exclusive club, the Order of the Longleaf Pine Award. Pat, awards mean nothing to her, but anyway, that's wonderful. And so we have the wonderful Pat.
Those are the people who really get them, the ones that, this is what I do, this is who I am, and, you know, the award is just, you know, but it makes a big difference.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Welcome, Pat.
Thanks, Heather.
Wow.
It's good to be back with you.
I know. We worked together for 17 years, and we were colleagues for 5 years before that, so we have a history. All right, but...
That is good.
Yeah, no, I was like, Alicia's going to have fun with this.
That's right. That's
so before we get into our history, we want to learn about Pat's history. I know a little bit about it, but tell our listeners about where you're from, and how did you get on this wonderful professional and personal journey into aging services?
So from, you mean currently from?
From the beginning.
Yeah,
from
the beginning.
Where
so
were you born?
I've been in this area for 33 years now, 32, somewhere around there. And I came from Pennsylvania. I was recruited to come here to run Carol Woods, the retirement community in Chapel Hill.
What? A woman?
I know.
I know some of the stories.
And that was a feat in itself because I was the only female candidate among seven other men. Mm. And I really didn't think I had a chance, and I wasn't really looking. And so it just kind of evolved. But kind of winding it back a little bit further, when I was in college, I had to take a couple of courses on aging, and I didn't want to do it because,
I
told the dean, I am wasting my money and your time because I will never work with old people. That is just not my thing. And I was so convincing that I was able to get out of those classes.
You got exempted.
So I got exempted from some core requisites, and took juvenile delinquency, that's what it was called at the time, children at risk, courses instead, because that's what I thought. I was going to be working in the penal system in some way, shape, or form.
That I did not know. I knew that you had no interest in older adults, but I actually didn't realize there was a whole criminal justice.
Yeah.
Go on.
So when I graduated, I couldn't find a job. And my undergrad was in recreational therapy. And at that time, they had just passed some federal mandates that if you took federal money in a nursing home type setting, you needed to have an activities director. Mm-hmm. Voila. I was certified with my degree. And so I became the activities coordinator, the one and only activities staff person of a 700-bed county facility.
Oh,
it was a lot.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it was a lot. But it opened my eyes. And that was in 1975. And it opened my eyes to the warehousing of the elderly in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I had to do something to elevate the lives of the elderly, or elders, as I now have termed them, because I am one.
Right.
So it was a long, circuitous route. I decided that I needed a master's in order to really affect change, which led me to North Texas to get my master's at the Center for Studies in Aging. And so when I was getting ready to do my internship, my husband wanted to move back to Philadelphia.
Okay.
Because he wanted to get his PhD from Temple. And so they presented me a possibility of an internship working for a CCRC, Continuing Care Retirement Community, or some people call them as Life Plan. And I said, no, I really don't want to work at a CCRC. So there's a theme to this.
There is a theme, which is just make Pat do what she, which is like kind of coming on this radio show.
I'm not doing this.
She doesn't get a choice.
I have learned never say never, because you never know what doors are going to open and how you're going to change your perspective. Mm-hmm. So I went back to Philadelphia and started working for CCRCs. My thesis was on forced relocation of the elderly.
Ooh.
And the place I was working for was building a new CCRC and was merging three freestanding homes, mansions, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
These people, one was retired musicians, one was ministers, and one was called Wayward Women. I don't understand
Wayward
that.
Wayward Women.
Wow.
I'm
not sure. I don't know what that means, but I want to be that. I just like the women.
Well, that did they help the ministers and the musicians?
I know. That was a fit for me. So so I put my research that I did in my master's program to work. And I never looked back. Hmm. I always worked with CCRCs from then on, or
you
aging services.
People
I caught
the bug.
People
don't realize how great it is to work with older adults. It's so fun.
And you always come out like I did in the beginning, thinking that detention and the younger ones are the ones. But they're not the ones.
No, And for me, my career has been, if you will, more of a calling.
Yes.
It's such a passion. And yes, the work was hard. When I think of 49 years of working in aging, no regrets at all. Good. Loved most minutes of it.
Well, you really never get out of it. As you see.
Oh, she's
well,
still in it.
You don't get out of it.
And then all of a sudden you're in it.
And then you are in it in ways that you really didn't quite expect. But
someone said to me once, she was a social worker, but she said, I will be a geriatric social worker until I am a geriatric social worker. And I think that's we're all in
that
aging
is right.
And now we're aging.
That is right.
Oh, my gosh. And so then they found you, and wooed you into coming to Chapel Hill?
Yeah. So when I got the phone call from the search consultant, I said that I was not interested. Again, another theme.
Yep. This is.
And Lee said, "Well, let's have lunch and let's just talk about it." And they had just done a search at the place that I was, and I did not want that position. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that it needed to be an internal person. I thought it needed to be an external. And as we talked about it, I then hooked up with a past board member of mine, and he gave me the best advice ever. He said, okay, so you don't want this job, maybe, and you've never really interviewed for a job that people have just kind of said, hey, we have this job. Do you want it?
Yeah.
And or come work for me, as my prior employer did. And so going through a search process really puts you in tune with what it is that is your true passion,
mm-hmm.
and what it is that your vision, what you stand for. And so why don't you just allow them, if they want to fly you down to North Carolina,
take the free trip.
Just do it. And so they flew me down. It was late February, early March.
Beautiful.
I left Philadelphia, gray skies, sleet, rain mixture. And got off the plane. And at that time, you know, you stepped right out on the tarmac, none of these tunnel things. And
the weather.
Blue skies. It was in the 50s.
Right.
Coming from the airport to Carroll Woods, there were flowers.
Trees.
In bloom. And it was like, this is nirvana. Because I'm a sunshine kind of person.
Yes.
And so I left the house telling Kurt, don't worry, I'm not going to take this job. And after a very rigorous multi-day interview process, I got back on the plane thinking, I really want that job. I really love that community. I think it's a good fit. I think that I can do what my passion tells me I want to do. And they then flew me down again, and I knew that I was serious because they said, bring the family.
And you had three little kids at that point.
We
three
had
little
three,
boys.
Three little boys, one just the age of one. And so that's how I got to Carol Woods. And it was just an unbelievable good experience, hopefully for both the organization and me. But
30 years. Yeah. I mean, crazy. So what was it that attracted you to I mean, clearly the blue skies attract you to Chapel Hill.
But I know, the weather. I took a job because of the weather.
Hey, look, that's okay. What brought a lot of us down here. I'm from the Northeast.
Yeah, it's what brought me here, the weather.
So what is it that attracted you to Carol Woods? And also, what is it about, for those who may not be familiar with what, we've talked before about it, but what a continuing care retirement community is? What was so fun
about
that?
Let me start with the CCRC, because I was in the 70s an advocate of Maggie Kuhn. And probably the listeners don't know who Maggie Kuhn was. Maggie Kuhn was the head of the Gray Panthers. And she was in Philadelphia, and I was one of her followers. And she called at the time CCRCs the Gray Playpens of the country. And so I think that my lens was filtered a little bit by that comment and that belief. But what I learned about retirement communities, continuing care retirement communities over the years, is the vital role that they help to play to keep people as active, engaged, and healthy as possible. So particularly one who has healthcare like a clinic on its campus, they're able to detect things sooner, and it's all coordinated. And the other thing that I've watched is the concentric circle of your friends just constricts over time. Whereas if you're part of a larger community, a planned community, it expands. It expands with every new move-in. And it just continues to expand. And so the diminishment and the social isolation I saw was really something that this type of community could speak to. The other thing, the community was very aging-friendly. And by that, I mean accommodating the frailties as people get older. And I really appreciated that. The one thing that I've heard through the years is, you know, I don't want to live with all those old people. My mother said the same thing to me when I broached the subject about Carol Woods and moving to Carol Woods. And she said, I don't want to live with all those people. And so I started showing her pictures of her friends and said, is that an old person? Is that an old person? Is that an old person? And finally she realized what she was saying. But I think it's the feeling that you're surrounded by just elders. And the reality is when you start factoring in the community and the staff, then you get the intergenerational aspect.
And for many years, we had a children's center on campus. Both my kids went there. And so really, there was even intentional efforts to bring more kids on campus. Something you touched on was what I kind of classify as the myth of retirement communities, this that it's all frailty, that you actually, I hear it all the time, and that especially these continuing care retirement communities or independent living, 55 plus, there's this real myth about, oh, I'm not ready yet because, and it's like people don't realize how much vitality.
And Heather, that's the phrase, I'm not ready yet. And through the years, I've found myself saying to people, ready for what?
Oh, beautiful.
You know, what aren't you ready for? And what are you ready for? So help me understand this. And as they begin to tell the story, it's those myths that come out, those gelled concepts that we have about retirement communities. So, you know, it's a learning process. And one of the things that I've learned over my life is just be open to possibilities.
clearly, even just, possibilities you want nothing to do with, because your through line of your entire career is doing things. I'm you're like, no, nah, I don't want to do it. That's probably a good sign you're going to be doing it.
Yeah. You want to go on the radio? I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I don't even think I gave a no option.
No, you did not give me an option.
She just gave you a date. I gave you a date.
So speaking of our, I'll go back to our cute little radio show. First of all, this is our 40th episode.
Oh, good.
Last year you missed, last week you missed, or 2 weeks ago you missed, it's our 1 year anniversary
That's
of our show.
Right.
And wait, okay, it's not about us. You will see. I will get to a comment here. Our very first show, May 2nd, I think it was, last year, it was right after the Surgeon General came out with the report about the intense problem of social isolation.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we have been talking about that, we in the aging space, for years. And you were really speaking about that when people's worlds, for either variety of physical or cognitive or just not driving anymore, their worlds get smaller, and then the negative effects from social isolation. And I think, and you spoke to this, that a community, and even if you're not in a retirement community, but just the importance of being surrounded by other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that whole I'm not ready yet, I don't think people are realizing, because when I talk with folks as they're looking for places, it starts to come up, I'm lonely.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Exactly.
Big one.
Exactly. You know, who's going to be there for me if something happens?
Yes.
What if something happens?
Right.
You know, that type of thing. So there's layers of security in addition to a vibrant lifestyle. And
You keep on living there, and you give up things. Not, this is not a commercial for retirement communities, but clearly I love them, because what I don't love is dealing with roof issues on my house. I'm not I don't want to be maintaining a certain amount of the property of that. Like, there are certain things that I can't even wait to, I don't cook that much now as it is. Right. So, there's the things that I have a lot of energy, but I want to spend my energy on doing this, talking to my friends with a microphone, not having to just exist.
Right. So, and I think we all experienced a form of social isolation during the pandemic. When we weren't able to be with people in groups that we were previously, and what that did to each individual, and affected them differently.
Mm-hmm.
But the downside of a CCRC is the affordability. And that is the huge stumbling block. And prior to Carol Woods, I spent part of my career working on a financial model to see if there was a way to bring that cost down significantly. But as soon as you add healthcare to the equation, it's going to go up.
It really does. And healthcare and a variety of other services.
Support services. Right.
I talk to people daily, and they are shocked at how expensive it is. And part of it, you could start to think through, well, because people are comparing it to maybe their mortgage payments or their rental payments. And so they're only looking at it from a housing cost. But then there's all these other things.
Right.
There's the non-healthcare, but even food and maintenance and the building support and all these things. I was talking to someone, just even this person who owns their own home, but still, you still put in a lot of money each year for the new roof and the new HVAC system and all that. But then you start to layer in, all the additional staff for healthcare support, more social support.
Mm-hmm.
But it is still, I'm glad you brought up affordability, because I was going to ask about this, the benefits of a retirement community versus aging in place. And I don't know what to make of this affordability chasm.
Well, it is. It is a conundrum.
Because it's expensive to age in place, too. I mean, if you don't need a lot of services, not so expensive. But you need 24/7 care. That's really expensive.
It's very expensive. Nursing homes, very expensive.
Very expensive.
Extremely expensive. And so I think that is the sticking point. And the whole issue for me in terms of, does a person who can afford it go to a CCRC or do they stay at home? It really comes down to a personal choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you look back over time, 49 years of being in the field,
You started with
Man,
you were
I
five.
Cannot believe I just said that.
It's cool. It's your badge of honor. In fact, it'll be so right. exciting next year when you're like 50 years.
Yeah, 50 years. Well, no, that's just the working part. Yeah. So that was yeah, just no, the work.
I know, in the field.
But now I'm retired, so that's a whole that's
yeah,
a whole
we'll talk about that marks. Soon. Are you really retired? I mean, you are, but.
Yes, yes. But anyway, I think that the thing that I have seen and hope to see a lot more of is community support services.
Yes.
And network services, not just standalone, but we really need a comprehensive network so that people don't fall through the cracks. And that, if I had continued working, I think that that's what I would have.
That's the next.
That would have been, yeah. I had like a checklist of things that I wanted to accomplish.
They can still be done. I do want to pick up on something. I'm not going to rant about it, but I may. Alicia, prepare
Go
me.
Ahead. Do it. Do it.
Uh-oh. The personal choice. When you said whether people move or stay home, it's a personal choice. And what I'd like to remind people is it's a personal choice, but it's not just that your choice, you as a person, impacts the other people around you. And so what I see often is people are making a personal choice that will impact their spouse, it'll impact their adult children, it will impact their friends. Mm-hmm. And so making sure that everyone's on board, because there are 53 million of us caregivers out there, family caregivers, mm-hmm. that
Good
are...
Point.
Addressing the personal choice, and Dad, if you're listening, you're doing great. It's
okay.
It's not your fault, and it's not your fault that mom got that you got sick, and then mom got sick during a pandemic.
Right.
So all those great resources weren't available. But I do think that, and I've had this. I'll get off my soapbox about independence versus interdependence, and this issue of your choice.
Mm-hmm.
I did ask an older adult once who was not planning on moving at all, and I said, so is your plan to move like preventative or in a crisis? And she said, I plan to move in a crisis. To which I said, and this person had no family around, and I said, so who's going to handle that crisis? And she goes, oh, my friends are. And I said, are they? And I knew some of her friends, right. And I said, are they aware of it? And I actually told some of her friends, and she was part of a lovely church community and friends, but you know, so again, it's a personal choice, but it needs to be done. And so I will get off my soapbox about that.
Right. I meant personal choice in terms of not just an isolated individual, but personal choice in terms of CCRCs are not the only option for everybody.
Beautifully
and
said, yes.
Home community-based services are not the only option for people. And so trying to figure out what fits the situation the best.
Because they're all unique.
But you're absolutely correct in terms of there is a whole system that, or lack of a system that surrounds each of us, and we should be aware and sensitive and inclusive about the planning process.
Absolutely. I legit heard, it's been a little while since I heard it, but I heard it last night. I was at this event and I heard a gentleman, because, you know, he... Over cocktails, I tell people what I do. And he said the classic, I plan to leave my house in a box.
That's the
feet
classic.
First. And
that
I
was
said,
my father.
Everybody says it.
And
he
I got
like,
his wish.
Oh, okay.
He did?
Yeah. Well,
yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He did. He had dementia. He was living with dementia. And it was getting very challenging. I was living here. I did have three siblings in Pennsylvania. One of them was really engaged in the caregiving. I was supporting her as she was supporting him. My mother, of course, was in the picture as well. But she had burnout syndrome. And and one morning he got up to go to the bathroom and had an aneurysm.
Wow.
And so while it was difficult on my mother, having his life come to such an abrupt end, there is that.
Yeah,
he got his wish
but and
doesn't
had a
always
wife
turn
and
out
five
that way.
Children and wonderful support. Yeah, so
doesn't
I
doesn't always turn out
I'm
that way.
I'm a fan of people making good informed choices, but just making sure the people around them are okay
aware
with it too.
Yep. Right.
Exactly.
So as we are doing a little nostalgia and thinking about the past and thinking about where we are now, I am curious, because I have my own thoughts about this, but I haven't thought enough about it. So let's talk about it online here. What have you seen as the big changes? So 30 years you've been in this community. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we are on the radio, so you don't have to say names, but what are the changes that you're seeing in terms of people's interests, expectations, the field?
Are they healthier and they are living longer in these communities, becoming more or less isolated and more active?
Well, you know, I haven't looked into the chronic disease proportions at this point, comparing them with what they were like 30 years ago. It is true, though, that the longevity projections are getting greater, particularly if
people like that. I don't. Everyone's like, everyone's living to, they said the person
you don't?
The person who's going to live to 120 has already been born today. Right, and right. I was like,
well, I don't mind it at this point.
All right. I know I'm the slightly youngest in the room. Ask me again in 20 years. But
I think regulation has increased significantly over the past 30 years.
Is that good or bad? Because say your famous line that you always said. Do you know which line I'm talking
which
about?
One
she does. She knows.
Well, you have to question the intent of the regulation.
That's not the famous line, okay. But yes, always question the intent.
I'm sure you had many.
That
I don't know which one stuck in your head.
The more regulation, nursing homes have more regulation than... Or we are second only to nuclear power plants?
CCRCs. Yes, CCRCs in the state of North Carolina has as many regulations as every other industry, only second to nuclear power plants. And so, but across the board.
Yes, but questioning the intent of regulations, you always taught me that.
Yes,
if it's a good regulation, that's for quality, good. Yeah. If it's not, if it's hindering independence and quality, pushback.
Right, and that went to your question of, so is that a good thing or is that not a good thing? And it depends on what the regulation is, and it depends on what it does to creativity and personal autonomy of the person who is affected by that regulation.
Yes, because, you know, well, let's just, I'm having fun ranting here, because, you know, like the best way to keep people from falling?
Oh, yeah.
Put everyone in a wheelchair and make sure they don't walk.
Yeah.
And, you know, so if you think about what's the intent and the kind of flip negative unintended consequences. You can have a very, in air quotes, safe space where nobody's falling, but then they're also not. So moving. I know over the years we've kind of talked about risk tolerance
and
safety.
And so don't get me started.
I'm getting you
started. Don't get me started on restraining the elderly.
Because I was going to, but
because we continue to do it, even though we took off the vests and the belts and the jerry chairs.
When I was doing your introduction, you are known. That was your big thing that you were known for, is creating restraint-free environments. Talk for a quick moment, because it used to be.
So when I got into it, physical restraints was the best practice of the day. And you were, anybody who was at risk of falling got tied down. Well, there was a small group that decided this was an inhumane practice. And actually, the research showed that tying somebody down not only broke their spirit.
Right.
The research had nothing to do with that. Unfortunately, you can't measure spirit. But what you can measure is muscle atrophy and what happened to an elder as they were sitting all day and not moving. Well, all you have to do is to listen, talk about what has changed, the awareness of the importance of moving.
Yes.
You've got to move to stay healthy.
Alicia.
There you go. That's,
you know,
that's,
if you don't walk,
my soapbox.
If you don't walk, you know.
You don't move.
That's it. And they're now touting walking as one of the best health habits that you could possibly do.
I will be talking about that in an hour.
Yeah.
Afternoon Talk
go
with Alicia starts at 3 o'clock.
Go for it.
So you've been a big proponent of getting rid of the physical restraints, and I'm just like throwing segues. I'm throwing softballs to
then,
you.
So we stopped tying people down, and there was still the issue of people at risk. What if they wander? What if they get lost? What if this happens? What if that happens? So that in the 90s, we saw this explosion of locked, segregated units, which just broke my heart because it was the reversal of everything that we had done. But instead of tying down the individual, we're now locking them behind a door. So you know, we talk about the spirit of inclusion.
I was going to ask you about
and belonging
that.
And civil liberties, basic human right to be free. And we don't lock up anybody else in this country except for one group who are incarcerated other than the elderly, and they are convicted criminals. You know, even then,
they have more freedom.
Yeah, they do. They get to go outside every day. So it is a challenge at this point, and
it is there. And I'm and I look. I have good friends that run memory care communities, and it is it's an interesting thing. And we always hear if you ask adult children, what do they want for their parents? They want safety.
Yep.
If you ask older adults themselves, what do they want? They want independence and choice and control. And so I still don't know where the
metal.
So Maya Angelou, one of my all-time favorites, said that we do the best we can with the knowledge that we have at the time that we have it, and when we know better, we do better.
There you go.
Well, what I hope, among others, is to put together a an awareness so people understand you can do better other than locking people up. I ran communities after I left the county home. No community that I ever ran ever had a locked memory unit or restraints. And so I am an advocate of practice. I have experience, and it's not isolated experience. And I just finished a shared learning session last week.
There we go. What are you doing now, Pat? You just jumped ahead.
For a group of colleagues across the country for the National Association, 38 organizations were represented. The cutoff point was supposed to be 30 because they wanted it very interactive. But there were 8 organizations that begged to get in on it. And we're having a conversation about what do you do? What do you do? And yes, it's an easy fallback, just like physical restraints were an easy fallback. Did it keep the person safe? Partially.
Made them angry.
Did it break their spirit? Yep. And when they got angry, what did we do? We drugged them.
Right.
So, you know, that is...
And that goes to the chemical restraints. I do wonder, I think about some of the places, if there needs to be a meeting of the community and the urban design, the, what's it called, urban planning, or I can't find the word, whatever it is, that you see a lot of communities right on highways and busy roads. And so then you see, well, yeah, there, the kind of argument for locking up spaces is because you don't want people going out and going into the streets. And so it does make you think the, what's it, oh, city and regional planning. That's what I was thinking.
Right.
It does make you wonder if we really need to rethink the environment. One of the wonderful things I loved at Carol Woods is we were on 120 acres. There was some space, some buffer, not a ton, but just, you know, but there are these other communities, they're right on busy highways. And so,
Yeah. And we're thinking that through. The one thing about problem solving is if you open your mind up to possibilities, which I mentioned before, and not think that it always has to be one way, but open your mind to possibilities and lean into collective wisdom. And Heather, I think that that's one of the things that you are so good at in terms of networking, in terms of exploring, in terms of being curious. I think if we all got together and we're curious about what other things could be put into place to adjust the environment to keep people safe, other than taking away their personal freedom, what might that look like?
I would love that. And also, I think we are a very litigious society.
Yes, I was going to say that.
We have no patience, and Pat knows that I like talking instead of writing, but if I were to write I have like 30 different blog post ideas or article ideas from when I was a caregiver, and one of them is titled "If It Wasn't Me, I Would Sue Me," because you know, when I was taking care of my mom, she fell. She had bruises on her, though when she went to the hospital, they gave her even more bruises, so then I felt better. But things happen, and everyone was telling me what an amazing caregiver I was, and blah 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 blah. If the same thing had happened, but it wasn't me, it was other providers, I would have sued them. I would have said, what? My mother has fallen 3 times in 24 hours. You need to get your act together. And, and we're so angry. And there's been this, and there are truly some awful places. So let's put those aside. There are truly, truly awful places. So, but there are a lot of wonderful places with caring people. And the care for older adults, as there's some frailties, is hard. And I think part of that collective wisdom is to just say, you know, walk in people's shoes. I could have a lot of judgment on some of my coworkers. And then, as you would always tell us, take a shift.
Yeah.
And then when I would take a shift as a, you know, caregiver, as one of our life enrichment staff, I was like, oh, this is really hard. And so when I did it myself, thus, sorry to go on my, I'm just ranting today.
No.
But this issue that we're so quick to be angry.
We are. We are. Well, and
look, our society have done that because of the workers. You think some people are in these places working because of a job, not because of a heart. And everybody doesn't have a heart to do this work. They just call it work.
That,
or pay.
Oh, yeah. You,
well, that's
you put your finger
issue.
Right on it. And so I got into the field because I wanted to work with elders and I wanted to help elevate their lives and their sense of purpose and fight against the prevalent ageism in our society. Well, I didn't move the needle all that much over all that time. But what I did find is that my focus on the elders now became my focus on the workers.
Yes.
Because I knew that the only way that the elders were going to get their
good
needs
care.
Met
That's right.
was going to be to make sure that your employees' needs were met. Because when their heart and soul is filled, then they have a well enough to give to others. If they're running on empty, it's really hard to give. And so, you know, that was the aha moment for me in my career before I ever came to Carol Woods, was that mesh between the two. But yes, Heather, you're absolutely correct. We've become a very litigious society. And I used to tell the board all the time when they'd say, oh, maybe we shouldn't do that because, you know, there might be a potential lawsuit. And I would always say, I believe that you can be sued at any time for anything, and you will be.
That's true.
And so why don't we just do what we believe is right?
It's right.
Because I can defend that a whole lot better than hiding behind the fear
of
the possibility of being sued.
And taking someone's sort of life and liberty away and their their independence or their and independence at all levels. You know, you can be in a nursing home and getting extreme amount of support and still have a level of independence. I wanted to go back because I wanted to remind you of one of the mantras you used to say, though I always made it, I think you used to use the word good and I changed it to great. But when we speak about the workers, and this is why I loved working with you for 17 years, in order for it to be a great place to live, it has to be a great place to
work. That's right.
And I think focusing, and that's why I stayed forever. And I think it's been a rough few years. I left the field literally January of 2020, and then March of 2020 hit. And I hear from my colleagues, and I see it, that the pandemic has messed with a lot of industries, but it definitely took a toll. At one point, CNAs, it was the most dangerous job. Do you remember during the pandemic? It was become one of the most dangerous jobs in the country.
Right.
And it is, let's just go on that soapbox, underpaid, undervalued, under-respected.
And you know, to the point of a person, this is not the work for everyone.
Right.
But I can't tell you how many times I have sat down with people saying, you know, it doesn't seem like you're happy doing this. It really behooves you to go find something that makes you happy, that gives you joy. Because I believe that it's culture. It's building culture. in any organization, in any facet of our lives. It's building culture, a nurturing culture, a compassionate culture, an understanding culture, a curious culture, not a blame and shame culture.
It's not a good place to work. It's also, and so I'll kind of change it a little bit or add another dynamic, and I got in a conversation with someone about this last night. In terms of what we've seen over the 30 years and expectations, even in my time, my almost 20 years, and now, now I'm 25 years, but at one place, watching the change in expectation of the residents. I'm not going to blame you boomers. Clearly, let's have a little generational warfare.
Did she just say I'm a boomer?
I did. I just blamed the boomers. No, I didn't. I was just being provocative.
We're a big generation.
There's still a lot of us. We are not all alike. That's right.
I did that more for fun.
Some of us were the me generation, and some of us were the us generation, and some of us are the they generation.
I hadn't thought about it like that, but this change in expectation.
I know, and I'm right there with you. I have seen over the years where expectations rise, but that's true of our society.
Oh, yes.
Our society is an immediate gratification society right now.
I'm talking about that on my show. It's just the microwave generation. You want it now, you want it, and get out of my way.
That's right.
Get out of my way.
And more, and it's gotten worse over the last few years, going back to this, if it wasn't me, it would sue me, a more adversarial. I was speaking to someone last night about the interplay between staff and residents of any community and that sort of connectedness versus the adversarialness, if anything goes wrong or different. And I said, you know, people have to be, this was going to be another blog post idea, which is sort of watch out. There's a group of us that love working in this field. Don't chase us away. I mean, we're all, we want you to have a great life. We want us to have a great life. But I feel, well, the whole country, I think, has gotten so, like, people just get so angry. And so I've seen that change over the year. The other thing that I was thinking about in terms of changes over the last 30 years, the, here's a fancy word, acuity level, which is a bunch of years ago, everything moved, you can either say to the right or everything moved to the left, which is ICUs are basically hospitals. You know, hospitals are more nursing homes. Nursing homes cares more in assisted living. Assisted living supports more in assisted independent living. Independent living supports are more at home with home care. Everyone, there are more needs happening at each of the levels. And then people have to be able to make sure, like, if you're going to live at home and there's going to be needs, how is that staffed and supported? If you're going to be, and I've just noticed that people are staying, but with more services, and both the community, like the broader community in your home, and the retirement communities, I mean, people are leaving the hospital sicker and quicker, as they say. That was another change.
And then you're sending them home with the people who are visiting them at the home, and you have a different age group at home, because you have to factor in the obesity now. They're right there with the aged or the seniors or like myself. So you're bringing that all together, and nobody's in the hospitals, but they're bringing the hospitals to the house. You know, the caretakers.
Yes, exactly. So I I'm curious. I know we just sort of went on a tangent, but Pat is, well, it's not a tangent. It's just another thing that I think it's adds a complexity to aging services, that people are needing much more complex care.
Yes, it has become much more complex.
In different environments.
And it's become more segmented, I think.
Yes.
There's not a natural flow of continuum. And I think that's true of medical practice as well.
Absolutely.
You know, you used to see one physician. Mm-hmm. Now you see one physician, and then you have to see another physician, and then you have to see another specialist, and another specialist, and another specialist.
And then?
And then
everyone's giving you different advice.
So you've got fragmentation, unless everybody reads everybody's notes. And so I think that the segmentation, the fragmentation, the complexity, all of that, kind of, we're kind of in a perfect storm.
Right.
No, okay, well, let's,
How do you do that, though?
Well, that goes into a question to Pat.
We have to remain optimistic and hopeful and work together, and to be open to new ideas and not get so cemented into our own little belief system. That takes courage.
It does.
That takes courage.
Caffeine. But, you know, I asked the question. I know we have just a few minutes left. I did ask the question last week, and I like this question, so I'll ask it to you, because I was talking to researchers in the brain health field, and which can be really kind of complex, and it has some darkness to it. It's an intense topic. But I asked them, and I'll ask you, what gives you hope for the future? What are you seeing that you're like,
that,
great?
That question?
So I believe in our youth. I think that that's really important. I have three magnificent, I call, say, boys, but
they
they're men.
Are wonderful.
And they are just phenomenal. I love their friends. There is a different approach between my youngest and my oldest. Mm-hmm. My youngest is much more into saving the earth. Mm-hmm. My oldest is much more into saving humanity. Mm-hmm. It's really very interesting.
They are so your men, your boys. They have this higher purpose. I mean, I think you fall a lot into that servant leader, and I think they are too, in that sense that they have a calling to do more.
I don't know how to respond, Heather, because without hope, what do you have? Despair. And I really have always been a positive person. Mm-hmm. I choose not to be negative. It's a It's a waste of energy for me. I'm high energy, and whatever energy I have, I want to make sure that it's put forward. And I've got to believe that other people, given the understanding and the education and the awareness and the focus, we can get this done.
We really can. All right. Well, there's still a lot more we can talk about. So this is your first of a few shows. Anything else that when we thought about...
I heard that.
I know, right? I just said that. Anything else that you did want to share? I know you put a little bit in there that you are still working in the field. You are still moving things forward.
I am. I'm, because it's a passion. It wasn't a job. And so I'm always going to be passionate about what I do. And that also keeps me balanced in terms of my sense of purpose. What can I give back? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really important. I think studying aging at such a young age, I knew that nutrition, keeping active, mm-hmm. keeping social networks, were all very important. And so, listeners, get out and walk, eat well.
Gosh, there we go.
Go call your neighbor, connect with your spouse, children, larger family, because that's what's going to keep everybody well.
That's beautiful. And Pat Sprigg, you have been part of my social connection for more than 26 years now. I can't thank you enough. Alicia, welcome home to us.
Yay.
And okay, so we're ending. Everyone end on a hopeful note, and it is beautiful outside, so go take a walk. And with that, we'll be with you next week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.